looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
So Andrew Benintendi doing anything stupid on the bases yet? Last night, did that happen? Last 24 hours, has Benintendi done anything stupid on the bases? Anybody know?
I don't believe so, Tony, but he has a 9-game hit streak, so get excited.
Oh, there you go. He's up to 275. Maybe he's actually starting to play. Who do you know? 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. I want to start with a story that was in The Athletic by Chad Jennings regarding the Red Sox in their bullpen, because Craig Kimbrel got in the game last night. Saved the game, but gave up a home run in the process. And I still think the Red Sox bullpen and their issues are sort of at the forefront of what's going on the field with that team. Off the field, there's a whole other set of issues. Tonight, the Baltimore Orioles are in town. The Red Sox avoided a sweep by beating the A's last night. And Murray and I were discussing this earlier. And again, this is sort of a tangential thought. But how many series are the Red Sox going to play this year that are really going to be at all interesting?
Like must-watch?
Like, when you really think about it, so the Yankees ones are obvious.
Yeah.
Right? There'll be six of those, although they've already played two. So other than the Yankees series, the two series they play with Houston will be worth watching.
Yep.
The Cleveland series will be worth watching. Maybe the Angels.
If Otani's pitching, definitely.
Okay, maybe the Angels. And they're playing the Washington Nationals in Interleague?
Yeah.
In Washington?
And I know I'll be mocked for this, but the Atlanta Braves in a few weeks.
Okay, so I say no on the Braves.
Oh, they're good this year, Tony.
I know they are, but again, name me three Braves. Freddie Freeman.
Yeah. Nick Markakis.
Ron.
Whoever these two young kids that they have there that are studs.
Okay, so like it's just a hard one to get amped up for.
Yeah, I got you there.
Sid Bream.
So now I am talking talk radio purposes here. So the ones I mentioned, Washington, and I think that's it.
Well, the American League blows.
It really is. It's horrible. Again, the Orioles are in here. It used to be the series with the Orioles meant something. Like, this is a garbage team. It's one of the worst teams in baseball. So anyway, 617-779-0985. Jimmy has opened the phone lines. We'll take your calls on the Red Sox. I know they won last night, but there's always something to bitch about. So Dave Dombrowski, Red Sox president, said this today to Chad Jennings of The Athletic. Okay? Talking about Joe Kelly now. I think he's one of the better guys in major league bullpens late in the game at this point. You guys listening to this?
What?
Ugh.
I don't know why people don't look at him as that. If you look at his numbers, they're strong. If you look at his stuff, it's strong.
Well, that's obvious.
We look at him as a premium reliever, and relievers in parentheses, but nonetheless. That is, and I should have mentioned this, the headline on the story. Chad Jennings, the author. Jennings, why Red Sox GM Dave Dombrowski isn't going to add a bullpen arm? Okay, now, first let me say, it's May 17th. Dave Dombrowski knows the trade deadline is still, what is that, 10 weeks away? I mean, we're talking 10 weeks until July 31st. 10 weeks. So he's not going to tip his hand now that he wants a reliever and then let other teams hold him over a barrel. Okay, so that's first and foremost. But given his history with bullpens, and this was always the Achilles heel of the Detroit Tigers when Dombrowski was the president and general manager there, I'm fearful that Dombrowski's actually telling the truth, that he actually thinks Joe Kelly's good. So look, if you look up Joe Kelly on paper, I mean, the numbers with Joe Kelly will actually, you would look at them and say, not too bad. This season, Joe Kelly has pitched 20 and a third innings. He's allowed 11 hits, 8 walks, 22 strikeouts. He's 2-0, and his ERA is 2.21. His whip is 0.93. So again, you look at Joe Kelly on paper, and you say, wow, that's pretty good. Except that you know what the problem is? And every big spot that I remember he was in, truly big spot, he failed. So on opening day, remember, Joe Kelly's the one that started that whole thing against the Tampa Bay Rays. Kelly's the one that couldn't throw a strike and basically walked the bases loaded. That was Kelly on the mound that day. And then in New York last week, he bounced a pitch to let the tying run score. It just feels to me like every time Joe Kelly's been in a big spot and opening day qualifies, he's failed. So the
as long as he's been here, it's not just this year either, Maz. And you can add, you know, look, for me, in terms of stuff, Barnes and Hembry, put them in there. They all have stuff. They lack intestinal fortitude, each and every one of them.
I mean, it's really, I don't know how Dombrowski could actually believe this.
Did you look at Joe Kelly's career ERA in the seventh inning? Because it's 5.21.
So, Jimmy, this is one of those things where I wonder if Dombrowski really just looks at the numbers. Ultimately, looks at the effectiveness and goes, because those are all the guys he acquires by trade. Tyler Thornburg has a good year, they trade for him. Craig Kimbrel has a good year, they trade for him. And Kimbrel's an easy one. But Drew Pomeranz looks like he's turned a corner, the numbers are good, go get Drew Pomeranz. Like there's never a hidden jewel with Dombrowski, right? It doesn't feel to me like there's any actual scouting, that it's all based on numbers.
You mean Austin Maddox doesn't count?
And so when I say scouting, I mean, well, he wouldn't be a good fit for our team because he's a low ball hitter and he's left-handed, dead pole, and like that's what I mean. And a real analysis of it. So Dombrowski was asked about the bullpen the other day in the midst of the whole Carson Smith fiasco. Here's what he said.
We have some depth in the bullpen. It's one area. We have some guys coming back. Tyler Thornburg's very close to coming back. I don't know the exact date he'll be back. Austin Maddox continues to make progress coming back. We just got Stephen Wright. We don't think Hector Velasquez will be out very long. So we have some depth in that area. But you know, Carson Smith's a good pitcher, and you never like to lose somebody like him by any means.
Okay, so like I hear that, and he starts rattling off names like Austin Maddox, and I'm supposed to believe Austin Maddox is an answer in the bullpen? But the Jennings story goes on. Dombrowski said that Kelly is one of the reasons he disagrees that the Red Sox desperately need bullpen help this season, even after Carson Smith's self-inflicted injury Monday night. Quote, maybe other people don't rate them as highly, Dombrowski said. We like Joe Kelly. We like Matt Barnes. If they don't like them, that's up to them. But we like those guys, and we think Tyler Thornburg will be back soon. Now, look, Thornburg, maybe. I'll give you a maybe on Thornburg. I don't know what he's going to give them. We'll see what happens. But can you rely on Thornburg?
No.
And how many big spots has Tyler Thornburg pitched in? See, to me, there's a difference between guys who put up numbers, especially in the bullpen, during the regular season, and then guys that you can put on the mound in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings against good teams on the road and expect them to throw quality strikes. Quality strikes. Not pitches in the middle of the plate that get crushed, whether they're 98 or 88, and not balls in the dirt or that miss the strike zone by a mile that ultimately lead you to walking the bases loaded. And I don't think Kelly can do it. I don't think Barnes can do it. I didn't think Carson Smith could do it, and we don't have to really worry about him now. Dombrowski goes on in this story. You can pick and choose where you put your dollars, he says. A couple of years ago, people in the media, in parentheses, were saying how unwise it was to spend big money on bullpen people. That was a trend a couple of years ago. And then this year, a lot of people spent it there. One winter, it's a smart decision. The other winter, it's not. So again, every time someone asks Dombrowski about the baseball decisions, the managing, well, you know, game management. I mean, they all make mistakes. I worked with Bobby Cox. I worked with Tony La Russa. Someone asked him a question in the media about bullpens. Ah, you guys have all the answers. 2 years ago, you told me this. Now you're saying that. One winter, it's this. One winter, it's that. Very dismissive. Very arrogant. And I worry that the arrogance is going to cost the Red Sox bullpen, especially in the middle of this Carson Smith nonsense. I don't know if Carson Smith was going to help them or not. But as a fan, let me ask you a simple question. Are you worried about the bullpen? Do you believe in Joe Kelly? Do you believe in Matt Barnes? Or do you think they need help? Because I look at it, and I'm not telling you I've seen more baseball than Dave Dombrowski, because I haven't. But you've seen a lot of it too. So you tell me, do you believe in this bullpen?
I don't know how you can. It was evident in game one that you referenced earlier that it was going to be an issue, and it has continued to be so far, and it's going to unless they make some sort of change. And now with this, what you're reading here, it doesn't sound like they're going to. I don't know how you can trust any of those guys. As I referred to it during the afternoon show today, spin the wheel of gutless bums. That's what you have to work with in that seventh and eighth inning.
So, Murray, maybe he's just playing the game here. Maybe he's setting it up so that he doesn't have to overpay come July 31st, although I sort of look at it with Dombrowski at the moment, and I say, you can't overpay.
You referenced the fact that he obviously hasn't found like a hidden gem here, a Koji Uehara or someone like that, and he's always had the knock of the inability to build a bullpen. He never found anyone like that. There was never any hidden gem either in Florida or with Detroit.
I mean,
to put you on the spot.
Well, when I say hidden gem, I mean that it always feels to me like, Max Scherzer, he acquired Max Scherzer as a starter from Arizona before Scherzer became Scherzer, so that's a good deal. I'm just saying, generally speaking, Dombrowski's career when he's been in the big markets, and I wasn't speaking exclusively about bullpens, he just goes out and gets the obvious guy. David Price, Craig Kimbrell, J.D. Martinez was one of the two best hitters available on the market this year. I mean, there's never some...
No, I know. Eduardo Nunez is maybe the one guy you could maybe make a case for.
And even then, like that, so that was a good pickup last year. His mid-season pickups last year were pretty good. So maybe he will make one this year. I don't know. I look at it. I have my concerns. 617-779-0985. We'll take your calls when we come back. And we will speak with Chris Smith. I don't know if he goes by Chris or Christopher. Of MassLive.com, because he's the guy that interviewed Carson Smith yesterday. And that got the comments that certainly suggested Carson Smith was throwing Alex Cora under the bus. So we'll get a lowdown on that whole situation and your calls next.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's the thing I find most amazing. Baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5. Sports Hub.
You can ask Joe Kelly. I throw my glove every day playing catch with him. That's part of my warm-up routine is I go through my throwing motion, throw my glove. Actually, usually hold on to it. Sometimes I accidentally release it. I think it's a freak accident. I mean, I think fatigue played a factor in my shoulder, and my shoulders couldn't handle it. I think my shoulder's tired in general. Yeah, it's just from pitching. I mean, I've thrown a lot lately, and I think my arm was just tired.
I don't agree with it. On a daily basis, we talk to pitchers and how they feel, and if they don't feel they can pitch that day, we stay away from them. So it caught me by surprise, but if he felt that way, he should have told it to us. We should have mentioned it. But actually, there was a day in, where was it, New York or Toronto? New York, I think, that we talked, and he said he wasn't available that day, and we stayed with him.
So there you go. It's the Carson Smith story in a nutshell. I don't know how, as a fan, you could defend Carson Smith on this one. And even if you hate the manager, and many of you do, I don't know how you can defend Carson Smith. He comes out of a game, he's mad at himself for giving up a home run, he spikes his glove and hurts his shoulder, and then has the audacity, after the fact, to say that his shoulder was fatigued, and he thinks that contributed to it. And so yesterday, Chris Smith of MassLive.com, who I think is new to the beat, but we'll ask him here in a second. Jimmy, do you know off the top of your head?
He's been on the beat for a few years.
Oh, he has? Okay, so
him and Jen McCaffrey both worked at Mass Live together.
Okay, so they were in tandem, and now Jen's no longer there. She's at
the Athletic.
Okay, so maybe that's why I'm just now noticing. And honestly, I don't go to Mass Live a lot, but Chris Smith did a good job on this. He went up to Carson Smith after the fact the next day and asked him what exactly he meant by saying he was fatigued, because it certainly suggested that he was throwing Alex Cora under the bus. And Chris Smith now joins us. Chris, are you over at Fenway tonight?
Yeah, I am over at Fenway. How you doing, man?
Very well. So thank you for joining us. And just quickly,
you're welcome.
I would like to know about the interaction with Carson Smith. Like, what was he doing? Were the other reporters there? It sounds like you went up to him alone.
Yeah, I did go up to him alone.
Yeah, so I would like to know, did you ask him that right off the bat? What was his tone like? All of those things.
Yeah, I just asked her right off the bat. I went up to him alone. It was pregame clubhouse, and he was, you know, he was sitting in his locker all alone. He was talking a little bit with Matt Barnes, but, you know, when Matt Barnes went off to do his little thing, I just went up to him and I said, you know, I basically put it to him as, you know, things get overblown in Boston, in the Boston media. And I don't know if you know that, but they do. And I said, Cora's already been asked on the other, your competitor station, as I said, you know, that he could be blaming the manager for this injury and or for overuse. And, you know, basically I said, you know, I just want to set the record straight. You know, and I want you to have a chance to say if you're not blaming the manager. And basically he just told me, you know, I have no comment. And, you know, he said, as you said, you can read the rest of the quote, but, you know, he said, I've said what I wanted to say. So, you know, so basically you can read into that quote as you want. I know that Carson wasn't very happy that I tweeted it out afterwards because Kevin Gregg, the media guy, told me that. And Carson wanted to talk with me today. But he left already after treatment, so we didn't get a chance to talk.
Okay, so Chris, did you, because we all interpreted it the same way, okay?
Yeah.
And that is to say that he was given an opportunity to let his manager off the hook, and that Smith opted to say what he said, which is no comment, meaning it certainly sounded like he was blaming Cora, and we just played Cora's response there a short time ago. Did you actually say to him, it sounds like you're blaming Alex Cora?
I didn't say that afterwards. But I did say, you know, it's been on the radio today that Cora's been asked about it, that you're blaming him. Are you blaming him? That's what I said to him initially. And he said, you know, I have no comment. He said, it is what it is. I'm in this situation now. He said, you know, and I don't want to talk about it. I want to move forward, you know, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, so I just kind of left it as that. You know, he wasn't in a bad mood. You know, he wasn't in a great mood, but it wasn't like he was mad that I asked him the question. You know, it wasn't like he was upset that I was there asking him that question. But I knew that Cora was going to be asked the question when we went up to his media availability in 20 minutes. So why not ask, you know, Carson Smith the question first, you know? And, you know, so I wanted to give him a chance to clear the air or, you know, give him a chance to set the record straight. He didn't really, you know, he didn't take it. Whether he, you know, meant to throw his manager under the bus or not, and, you know, as I've heard from Kevin Gregg, the media guy, he's a little frustrated with the way that people are interpreting it. You know, as I said to Kevin, I said, you know, I just gave the how I phrased the question and the response. But he's a little frustrated about the way that people are interpreting it.
Okay, so Chris, beyond what his reaction is and beyond anything going on between you and Carson Smith, do you get the sense that, and I'm not talking about what Alex Cora said publicly, because we've played those comments, but in being around the team, do you get the sense that they are frustrated with him because they feel like he threw his manager under the bus?
Who is frustrated with who, do you think? Who are you asking me?
I'm asking you if team officials... Okay, are frustrated with Carson Smith because they feel like he threw Cora under the bus.
Well, I haven't been around Dave Dombrowski at all since this whole thing took place. I just, you know, initially, I think Cora's upset, and I asked Cora today at the pregame media availability if he's talked to Carson yet, and he said no. And that's kind of surprising to me, but as I said, Carson's already left. He left before the clubhouse opened today. So I think that Cora was upset. I think Cora, you know, took it the wrong way, took it kind of how everybody took it, if he could be blaming him, and he wanted to know what's up. But Cora hasn't had the opportunity yet to talk to him. The surprising thing in all of it, when we talked to Dave Dombrowski, when we talked to Cora, before we talked to Carson Smith the first day, this is 2 days ago, they all said that he was so apologetic, you know, because Peter Abraham of the Globe. He had asked if he was going to have any consequences, if he was going to be punished by the team. And Dave Dombrowski said, you know, he said, no, you know, I couldn't see anything because, you know, he's very contrite. He's very apologetic. He feels really bad for this, that this happened. You know, and then we get Carson Smith, you know, an hour later, and he's saying that he didn't seem as, you know, he did take some responsibility, like, I know that this happened. I could feel it pop out of the socket when I threw the glove. But he also said it could have resulted because of overuse, or it could have resulted because I was tired, and it just happened to happen because, you know, it would have happened anyway, eventually.
Okay.
So it was weird that they were all saying that he was very, you know, apologetic and felt really, really bad. And then all of a sudden, you know, so I think they're probably thinking like, whoa, this guy, you know, he seemed really apologetic to us. And then all of a sudden, he's kind of throw, you know, he's got a different tune with the
sure,
music.
Yeah. They feel like that he's being inconsistent and frankly duplicitous. But yeah. Before we let you go, is there any more clarity on exactly what the injury is with Carson Smith and what the prognosis is? And is everyone expecting, because it feels like it, Chris, it feels like everyone's expecting him to be out for the year.
Yeah, I would say he's out for the year. I mean, look, he's going to go in a week. He's going to go to Dr. Allcheck in New York, and I guess that it's not the rotator. I guess that's checked out okay. They're going to look at the labrum at that point and see if it's the labrum. And you've been around baseball a long time, Tony. What pitcher in labrums, what does that mean?
Oh, yeah, no. He won't, if it's a labrum thing, he's not going to be able to pitch this year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I would suspect that we don't see Carson Smith, and, you know, and that makes Thornburg all that more important. But as we've seen the past couple, you know, as we've seen the past couple of years, you can get bullpen arms in midseason for not giving up much in the trade pocket. You know, he's done it with Brad Ziegler. He's done it with Addison Reed last year. So, you know, Dave Dombrowski's going to make a deal at some point. It's not just going to be Tyler Thornburg coming back. So we'll see.
So, Chris, listen, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Chris Smith, MassLive.com. Again, he's the guy who went up to Carson Smith and started this whole storm. It was Carson Smith telling him that he wasn't going to comment any further when he was asked about the perception of throwing his manager under the bus. So, look, maybe Smith now thinks he can blame it on Chris Smith. I would say he had the chance, it sounds like. I mean, you know, I don't know how closely you guys paid attention to the interview. It sounded like Carson Smith had the chance to say, no, I'm not blaming the manager.
He's mad.
And he chose not to, and then he ran to the PR guy. He wrote something bad about me. Where?
I mean, so I can tell you that one's the oldest trick in the book. That one is the oldest trick in the book. All of a sudden, something's written poorly, and now you go have the PR guy come find the media member. So, you know, to me, Carson Smith could have been, at the very least, could have done a better job of taking responsibility and accountability for doing something stupid and screwing over his team. And he didn't do that. David Price is back on the mound tonight, meanwhile. Nice segue, huh?
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
You're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Probably he's not happy with the outing, but for me, changing speeds, using the breaking ball, using elevated fastballs, that was good. That was good to see. And he competed. That's all we want for him.
That is Red Sox manager Alex Cora talking about David Price after his last start in Toronto. A simple question for you, Red Sox fans. Simple question. What's your level of confidence in David Price right now? What is it? Last game wasn't bad. 5 1/3 innings. 5 hits, 2 runs, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts. Price goes on the mound tonight against the Baltimore Orioles. How do you feel about Price right now as a pitcher? Okay, as a guy, we all know. I mean, it feels like the guy is... Oh, there's always something with Price. Always. Allergies, tingling in his fingers, cold weather... Whatever it is always an issue with David Price. Always. What about Price the pitcher? What is your level of confidence in Price right now? How do you feel about him? That is my question for you tonight. 617-779-0985. In the interim, here's what I will tell you about Price's performance of late. Okay? His first two games of the year were fabulous. Murray, you've mentioned this. He looked great.
He looked like what you saw in the postseason last year coming out of the bullpen.
14 innings, 7 hits, 10 strikeouts, no runs. He was 2, or the team was 2-0, he was 1-0, with a 0.00 ERA. Zip. He had not allowed a run, he only allowed 7 hits in 14 innings. I mean, he looked dynamite. Then the thing happened with the cold hand against the Yankees. Since that time, David Price, 2-4, 28 and a third innings, 34 hits, 16 walks. His ERA is 7.31, and the batting average against him is 298. And if you wanted to take that even further, the OPS against him is 913. 913. Dave's in South Boston. Dave, you tell me, how do you feel? Oh, is he there? I can't click on him.
Being screened right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought he was up on the phone, up on the line already. So here's what I'll tell you about Price. We started the night talking about the bullpen and whether or not Dave Dombrowski is going to add to this bullpen at midseason. I'm going to tell you that David Price is one of the reasons why Dombrowski can't make a call yet. David Price is a big problem at the moment because this guy's your number two starter. And again, he's a big problem because of the pitching. Forget the attitude. The pitching. Now, they go hand in hand, but the pitching is a big part of this story, and maybe we're not putting enough emphasis on it. The Red Sox don't have a lot to trade. They don't have a lot of room with the luxury tax threshold. So they're not going to be able to make a lot of moves with this team. Bullpen feels like the obvious one. Except that what if Price pitches like a guy who's a number four starter? And lately it's been worse than that.
So I'm glad you brought this up too, because I was thinking about this. Because if he goes into the tank, and never mind the stuff off the field, like I say, if he's just, you know, if he's broken, you know, this team, as presently constituted, looks like they should be able to go on a deep playoff run. You're going to need another starter. So if you were to look at, say, the Mets, who already suck, and maybe you could get a Noah Syndergaard or a Jacob DeGrom or someone like that, well, you're going to have to make a decision. And even looking at the, you know, their farm system, now with Jake Groom done for the year with Tommy John surgery and Michael Chavis out 80 games with the PED, I don't even know if you can make a move anyway. But it feels like it's not just the bullpen that might have to be dealt with. They might need another starter.
Okay, so this is, and Price is the key to the whole thing, Murray, and I'll explain why in 1 second. Dave is in South Boston. Go, Dave.
Hi. I just heard Murray say it. I already think Price is in the tank. He's made excuse after excuse to not pitch. I don't think he likes pitching here, and I have zero level of confidence in him.
Yeah, Dave, we know he doesn't like pitching here. Okay, so I guess my question is, have you seen enough from him as a pitcher to think that it's going to get a lot better?
No.
Okay.
I have seen him pitch, and he can pitch when he pitches good, but I have zero level of confidence that he will do that for the Boston Red Sox.
Okay, so look, I don't know. Price the guy you can hate. Okay, you want to hate Price the guy, hate him. I'm talking about Price the pitcher now. So from a pure baseball standpoint, what do you think he can be? That's my question to you as a Red Sox fan. What do you think he can be? And here is why this is important. You have limited prospects to deal, as Murray said. Okay, so you don't have the artillery to go out and make multiple trades. You've lost Jay Groom, you've lost Chavis. Swihart might be the biggest bullet you have in terms of a trade acquisition. That's number one. Number two, you're up against the luxury tax threshold for all intents and purposes. You're what, $8 million under, $9 million under, somewhere in that area? So you might be able to go out and get yourself a pitcher. You might be able to go out and get a hitter if you think you need one of those. You certainly can go out and get a reliever and fit him under the luxury tax threshold. But to fill multiple needs, that's going to be a neat trick. I don't know that the Red Sox really have the latitude to do that, financially or in terms of the prospects they want to deal. And third, if you do need a starter, remember, this team was built on starting pitching. The whole idea was Sale, Price, Porcello, Pomeranz, Eddie Rodriguez, that your five was as good as anybody in the game. Maybe Houston's better at the top, but you're better than the Yankees. 1 through 5, even 1 through 4, you can pretty much go up against anybody. But if Price is not what he can be, he's the linchpin, really, to the whole thing in terms of being the strength of your team. Pomeranz hasn't looked great this year. Eduardo Rodriguez had a great outing 2 starts ago against the Yankees. The last one, he was mediocre again. And Porcello, to me, feels like he is now coming back to what he is, which is, in a lot of ways, the perfect number three starter. So Porcello, his average year in Boston, 14-12, 4.17. Price is the key to the whole thing. And if Price can't start, and when I say start, can't start effectively to the point where he's a 15-game winner, okay, and I use that term loosely, but you know what I mean. a legit number two starter. If Price can't do that, you now have to go out and get a starting pitcher and maybe put Price in the bullpen to solve your bullpen problems. Okay, so this is why I say Price is a key element in this whole thing. If you need bullpen help, Price might be able to fill it. But now you've got to trade for a starter. And you know what the problem there is? What other team in the division needs a starter, Murray? What about Jimmy?
New York.
The Yankees need a starting pitcher more than anybody. And the Yankees have great payroll flexibility. And the Yankees have a truckload of prospects to deal with. So you could find yourself, if David Price goes belly up, and again, I use that term loosely, but if David Price gets to the point where he's mediocre or worse, if he's a number four starter, if that's what he is stuff-wise now, you then have to go out on the market, and the Yankees are going to beat you to the punch. Mark my words on that. Evans in Brookline. Evan, go.
Hey, Maz. I've hated Dombrowski since the beginning. I thought he built a really flawed roster out in Detroit. And, I mean, they were better on paper than us in every way in 2013, and we still came through because their lineup was flawed and their bullpen had a gaping flaw in it. So I just think that the fact that we've trusted Dombrowski with all of these things, and almost all of them, whether it's his fault or not, have turned up wrong. And I just think we really should have seen this coming. And I don't think we're going to win more than one or two playoff series ever with him as our GM.
Okay, so Evan, look, yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, the Astros are a wagon. They are. They're loaded. And at the moment, they have their hands full with the Angels in the West. But I think when all is said and done, Houston's going to go on a run here at some point where they just blister the field. Now they're going to have like a 40-game stretch where they go 30-10. I think you can see that one coming. Their pitching's that good. Their lineup's awesome. Maybe the bullpen there is suspect. I thought that last year, and they won the whole thing. So Houston's loaded. But it does feel like Dombrowski's teams always have the same problem. And it always feels like, for the amount of money he spends, that there are more holes than there should be. My buddy Angelo is in Methuen. Go ahead, Angelo.
How are you doing, Anthony?
Good.
What's your thoughts on my boy, the X-Man?
So Angelo looks to me like maybe he's starting to find his groove again. I was happy to see that home run last night. I'd like to see more of them.
Okay, thank you, Anthony. Have a nice night.
Angelo, that's what I love about you, pal. Easily pleased customer. Like, he calls all the time, right?
Great
all the time. Loves the show.
On a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, really. He's like my pal. And you know what? It's people like Angelo. I told you guys this last night in an email. I wanted to share this with the listeners, but I forgot. I have a little show announcement, which we'll get to. I'll tell you what, in just a second.
Well, just real quick with Angelo, one thing I appreciate about him lately is he stopped defending Jackie Bradley Jr.
Well, how could you defend him at this stage? Even Angelo's given up on him. Maybe that's a sign for Bradley. Although, as you said, Murray, Bradley's in the lineup tonight.
He is, yeah.
And that home run Bogaerts hit last night, 1-1 slider. It was not your classic sort of, you know, hitter's count that Bogaerts has been punishing pitchers on as he was early in the year. But it almost felt like he knew what the pitch was coming. The pitcher was on the mound at the time. I want to say threw like 8 sliders in a row or something like that. So I think Bogaerts finally just said, if he throws me a slider in his middle in, I'm going to crush it. And he did. And it was obviously a huge home run, completely changed the game. Neil's in the car. Go, Neil.
Yeah, hi. You know, I'm looking at this Red Sox roster with the highest payroll in the league, and I'm upset about it. Because I feel like at every position we have a hole. At pitcher, I feel like we need one more. In the infield, I don't know why Blake Swihart's up here. He's for a trade, but we're missing one, a backup infielder there. And we need an eighth inning guy, like you said. And the problem is that with our batting order, the bottom three is completely useless. Whenever I watch them, it's always so flawed.
So, Neil, look, the one thing I'll say is that Pedroia may come back, and that'll put Nunez on the bench, so it'll improve the bench. And if Thornburg can pitch, maybe he's the eighth inning guy. So there are some potential built-in solutions here for the Red Sox. I don't want to make it sound like they have no answers at all. But I also think that inevitably what happens over the course of a full season, something else goes wrong. Like David Price doesn't pitch well, and now you need a number two starter. And I never thought I would ever be saying that I think the Red Sox need a starting pitcher. But of all the guys in the rotation after Sale, the only guy that has had any real history of winning consistently is Price. So I don't feel great relying on Pomeranz or Eduardo Rodriguez to be something better than what they are, which is a number four starter. And if you lose Price, if Price regresses to the level that those guys are at, that Pomeranz and Eduardo Rodriguez are at, if that's what he's going to be as a starting pitcher too, well, then now you have a problem on your staff. And I do think that Price would be better served to be used in the bullpen. I mean, I think the Red Sox would be better served to put him there, really, is how I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.